front row, Marquez, Dovizioso and Lorenzo. 28 laps of pure theatre about to get underway here in legendary Le Mans.
Welcome to Motopod, the internet radio show all about motorcycle road racing. This is episode number 450, or 451 for Martin,
for Wednesday, the 20th of May, 2015.
Thank you.
No worries.
Thank you for finishing this up.
Sometimes you just need a little push for your bump start.
I know. My name is Jim Race. I am here in the north of California. Over across the pond, we've got Harry.
Yep, in Canterbury. Don't know if it's sunny. Haven't been outside for about 3 weeks, as I've been doing nothing but reading about ancient Roman jurists and intellectual property right law in the UK. So, I don't know. Maybe it's sunny. Maybe the world's ended.
Wow, you really got an exciting lifestyle, my friend.
Yep, it's... It's up and down, you know, up and down.
All right. This week on the show, we do have at least one interview, perhaps more, but it all depends upon when things get edited. But we did have the Northwest 200 over the last week. We've got Brandon Cretu, who's been on the show a couple of times before. We've got him both pre-Northwest 200 and post Northwest 200. And Harry, sorry about the broken up stuff, but ladies and gentlemen out there in Motopod land, I trust you're going to enjoy these.
Yeah, normally the road races are a bit more revealing perhaps than the usual World Superbike and GP riders.
To some extent, yeah. they've got a little bit more of their life on the line, don't they?
Yep, certainly.
Yep. Move on, man.
Yeah, so first of all, a big thank you to all the subscribers. Clearly, Martin Darlington's bit of a guilt trip at the start of the last show worked, because we've had a huge influx of donations, and as we always say, Every little donation really does help, and we've had some really generous donations this week. So a big shout out to Richard Best, Gary Shavitt, Larry D. Jones, Bruce Howie, and David Jevons. So yeah, big thank you to all of them. And if you'd like to donate to Motopod, you can go to the motopodcast.com website on the left-hand side. There's a couple of PayPal links. There's one where you can donate whatever you want, or there's one where you can do a yearly subscription. So that's, you know, $5 or $10 every month. And all those donations really do help keep us going, you know, help us get to rounds when we're not doing exams and things like that. So, yeah, it really is appreciated. And a big thank you to everyone who sent in money this week, and a big thank you to anyone who sends in money in the future.
Apparently you had an issue in the last episode.
Yeah, apparently I've done Randy Depunier a disservice. I did actually go and check this once I saw that Martin had put that in there, and yes, I will hold my hand up and say I was a bit disparaging to Randy Depunier. Last week I suggested that Randy Depunier had less points in the World Superbike Championship than Troy Bayliss. However, it turns out that Randy Depunier actually has the same number of points and is higher in the table due to, I'm guessing, the amount of race finishes. Both Troy Bayliss and Randy Depunier are on 15 points in the World Superbike Championship. Although, in my defense, Troy Bayliss did the first two rounds, whereas Depunier has raced in all five rounds of the World Superbike Series. So the kind of general point about Randy Depunier's struggles does stand, I feel.
You know, this could get me in trouble because I'm going to be hanging out with Troy Bayliss in 9 days.
Bit of a teaser there for everyone, clearly.
as you may have heard, he'll be over here in the U.S. doing flat track. I will be attending the Sacramento Mile, myself and Jamil Verio, and we will be covering that event, which is kind of one of the biggest events on the flat track championship. And, you know, he's already over here in flat track this year. So I'll run it past him and see if he heard what you said.
Hopefully Troy's a fan of the show.
Troy is actually a fan of the show, strangely enough.
Well, that puts a lot of pressure on me.
It does.
Speaking of fans of the show, a fair bit of listener feedback over the last couple of weeks. If you have any listener feedback and you want to send it to us, the email address is motopod@motopodcast.com. That goes to all the hosts. You'll probably get a response.
Probably.
Probably from someone. I mean, I'm kind of a in and out of the real world at the second with exams, but you and Martin seem to be pretty good on the replying, so you'll probably get a response.
But we're pretty good. In fact, you may get a deluge of response because we end up talking amongst ourselves and
yes.
We kind of forget that, somebody actually wrote this in, because we're more than happy to argue amongst ourselves, aren't we?
Yes, as we'll get to in a second. First, Martin asked about people's opinions of the Austrian Red Bull Ring. That's obviously joining the MotoGP calendar next year. F1 have had, I think it's one race there, but we had Sam McIntyre and Dave Jevons. Dave Jevons, who also, did donate, as I scroll up the page to double check. So extra thanks to you, Dave. So Sam and Dave both wrote in with their impressions of the Austrian Red Bull Ring, and things sound pretty good. Martin did like Dave's description of fans sitting on grassy knolls overlooking forests, and much of the track whilst in the background and alpine vistas sounds great. You know, maybe a bit like Bruno, bit of news on Bruno coming up as well. Continuing on, Sam feels that there are a few too many heavy braking zones, so we may see the Repsol Hondas, or may not, with a strong advantage there. Then this year will be next. That doesn't really make sense, but anyway. And many things may change by then. Sam also does say that though the track is likely to set up an epic Moto 3 race. And it sounds all pretty good in that respect. So hopefully the Austrian Red Bull Ring will be an excellent round.
I would have to look at that track. Is that a Tilke track?
I don't think so. I think it's quite an old track that was recently renovated.
Okay, cool.
Now onto this next email that has caused a lot of discussion.
Yes, it has.
Corey Allen wrote in asking a question about hard versus soft tyres. Now, Corey had been a bit bemused by a comment from James Whitten referring to something called cold tearing. Do you want to explain what cold tearing is?
To be honest, I don't know if I'm honestly qualified to do it. Cold tearing, I know I'm going to get a lot of listener feedback on this.
Well, we are putting an asterisk next to everything that we say for the continuation of discussion about this email for all the listeners out there.
The goal here, folks out there listening, is that we will have an expert from both Bridgestone and Pirelli on the show in a future episode to talk about this. But essentially, it's when you've got, I hope I get this right, not enough pressure in your tires, and you end up having the sides of your tires.
I think it also relates to temperature. So essentially what we seem to kind of agree amongst ourselves was that generally, the general consensus is that in cold conditions, you generally want a soft tire because that gets more heat in. But then in hot conditions, you want a harder tire because the heat causes the tire to degrade quicker. But if it's too cold and you have a soft tire, then essentially chunks of the tire come off because it's too cold and they get ripped off. Science. So there's kind of a bell curve of operating temperature.
But here's where it's totally different. So, and this is the conversation that we had in email. The Bridgestone race tires are light years ahead. The Bridgestone race tires for MotoGP are light years ahead of what you've got for the production tires that are used in your national series. And same thing for World Superbike. So it, literally you're comparing apples to oranges. It's so hard to do. And so having a conversation about that it's really, really hard because you can't compare. There's no way to do it.
That, and there's also a lot of different terminologies. The other thing that came up was that for Bridgestone, I guess it kind of makes sense that the harder tyre will last longer in the race. That's generally accepted. But yep. for in Moto 2 and Moto 3, the hard tyre is the option that actually drops off sooner. So you want to run the softer tyre for more consistent grip over the race. So then that also caused some discussion. So, yeah, as we said, it's a very complex issue on multiple fronts.
Would you like to see, and I think I would too, although I think it's kind of cool that Ducati cheated and they got a great allowance on tires. they didn't cheat. They went within the rules, mind you. But I would kind of like to see the same allotment of tires across the field. Just to be simple.
Yeah, I guess, I mean, yeah, I think right now the softest tire that obviously Ducati get and say Repsol Honda don't get, I think that only really helps in qualifying. And I think that even without that tire, Ducati would still be front two rows if they were on the same tires.
Yeah. But I mean, it doesn't really mean anything when we actually get to the race. You've still got to run what everybody else is running.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. God, I don't want to talk about this part.
Yeah, nor do I really, but I guess we have to do it. So the MCN Fantasy League, the pin is 19132. That's the listener league, open to everyone. We have a pretty steady trickle of people in the league. I think it's up to about 225 members. I probably need to go approve some more, so I'll do that after the show. But yeah, league's trickling on. Once again, we have Steve James with MK Racing leading.
Well
the
done.
League. Yeah, really impressive. Like, absolutely destroying most of the hosts. So MK Racing, 676 points, which is good enough for 22nd overall out of everyone playing the MCN Fantasy League. So that's really impressive.
You do know that a couple of years ago, we had one of our listeners win.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah.
Toby Hurst won the whole damn thing.
Yeah, but that's when it was good stuff, like a whole motorcycle. Now it's just a set of Dunlop tires or something.
Yeah. No, he did win a motorcycle.
That's pretty impressive for something that's free. But yeah, so Steve James in first. Second is Paul Simpson, Simo Sliders, 643 points. Then just behind him is Mark Crewe, Haringworth Hustlers, 641. All three of those names are now pretty regulars at the top of the table, and with the quite limited transfer windows, I imagine that they'll have a pretty set top five finish at least in the Motopod League this year.
No doubt. And then when it comes down to the hosts, and this is the part where I just kind of cringe, Martin and Scott Bolton are both tied for 10th in our host league at 617, which really, that's a very solid points lead.
Yeah.
Jules is down in 53rd at 539. Dave has somehow resurrected himself after a dismal last couple of seasons. You yourself are at 99th, and hey, well, 99th isn't bad.
Yep, top 100. We're okay.
I'm at 167th, and that is not my best run. And Len Padilla, all the way down. Well, somebody has to hold last, right?
Exactly. He's
no Marco Melandri, though. He's not down in the he's not down in the 200s yet.
He's at least scored points. He's at least scored points.
He at least has scored points. All right, dig into the news.
Yeah, so there's a fair bit of news. You know, we're about a third or a quarter of the way through most of the seasons. So things are starting to really kick off. One of the main things we'll start with that's kind of kind of jumping ahead a bit to MotoGP results, but it's that Honda's not quite as dominant as they initially seemed. Both Yamaha and Ducati seem more adaptable to variations in temperature, track surface, and even track layout. Some commentators are starting to question whether we have a similar situation, albeit at a slightly lesser level, as Ducati had in the post-2007 title-winning years, where an exceptional rider like Stoner or like Marquez has been able to mask some of the issues that the bike's been having. As we'll get to when we get to the MotoGP results.
Are you a bit shocked by that this year?
Yeah, I am kind of shocked. I wouldn't say shocked. Shocked may be a bit extreme word. I'm a bit surprised that the Honda is struggling so much. I tweeted about it during the race that, you know,
are you more shocked that Ducati has actually made such a recurrence this year?
No, I mean, GG Delini has proven on multiple occasions that any project he's touched, when he's been given the freedom, has turned pretty good. He's a genius when it comes to motorcycles, and with the Audi money and the Audi, I guess, resources available to Ducati, I thought that this was almost certainly going to happen. I mean, even before GG came, Ducati was making steady progress, and with riders like Andrea Iannone and Andrea Dovizioso, I think that you're going to have steady progress, even if you didn't have GG there.
But I mean, it took a solid 2 years to turn the boat around.
Yeah, I think a lot of that was also, you know, trying to sort out the management, and, you know, GG talked a lot about connecting the factory to the races and getting the flow of information better. So I think there was a lot of kind of admin stuff, maybe is the word for it, to sort out. Okay. But yeah, Honda are definitely struggling a bit. Yeah, we'll get to the reasons for that a bit later. But you kind of wouldn't be amiss of thinking that the race last weekend at Le Mans was maybe held in 2009 when it was just Dovi and Danny on the factory Honda, and they were really struggling compared to the Yamaha and the Ducati. So true. Yeah, that's interesting to see.
Berno.
Yes, some big news. Quite big news.
Yeah. You run with that because you know more of it.
Yeah. So. Bruno for the last couple of Bruno slash Berno, whichever one you want to say. I say Bruno because Nick Harris says it, and Nick Harris is anyway. so for the last couple of years, Berno has been in kind of some trouble. They haven't quite always had the required money to pay Dorna. So if you want to host a race, you have to pay Dorna money to get them to come to your circuit. That's just how these things work. And for the last few years, you know. It's Carol Abrams' dad is the one who owns the Brno circuit. He's a multi, I think, billionaire, probably. So he owns the circuit. So it's been his company that's been managing and paying for all of this, but they've been helped out by the Czech government. But that the 2015 round could be cancelled. Last year, there were discussions between the organisers because Dorna's required hosting fee of 2.73 million euros, or 75 million Czech crowns, if that's what floats your boat, and Mr. Abraham Sr. couldn't afford to pay this. So that's the money they need for this year. It turns out that there's been a bit of a disagreement between Carol Abraham Sr. and the governor of the Czech province, which Brno is in, and neither side wants to kind of hand over ownership to the other side. So it's kind of this political deadlock. This problem is made worse by them not only having the money for this year, but they're also still owing Dorna some money from last year. And when you're talking about multi-million euro deals, that's quite a big deal. You know, it's not like it's sorry I didn't get you that 10 bucks, mate. It's a lot more zeros.
Yeah.
So currently, it doesn't look like there's a replacement. Brno Circuit has until the 1st of June to come to some sort of decision and some sort of conclusion over what they're going to do, or the round will be cancelled, because, you know, at the end of the day, it is a business for Dorna, and they do need to get paid, as does everyone.
But that would suck, because the Brno Circuit is outstanding.
Yes, it is. It is, certainly.
To see that fall off of the map would be a blight on the MotoGP championship.
Yeah, it would. So yeah, if it gets cancelled this year, tickets have already It's already been said that if it does get cancelled, tickets will be refunded, so no worries about that. But there is currently no replacement set, so the championship will be reduced by one round, which could be very bad for Marc Márquez.
But, you know, we hear this all the time, Harry. Mm. You hear about these kind of crises. They always end up getting fixed one way or another. Somebody's going to come through. The thing will get fixed. It'll
hopefully
go through.
Hopefully.
Yeah.
We'll know very soon. 1st of June is 2 weeks away, give or take, from when we're recording this. So we'll have an answer pretty soon. But yeah, as you say, it would be a huge disappointment because Bruno's, you know, is one of those tracks that's kind of up there with the likes of Phillip Island and Mugello, where it's just this natural flowing track that always produces great racing.
If you've already booked your flights, don't cancel them yet.
Yeah, exactly. And if not, that part of the world's, it's quite nice. There's a lot of breweries and things there, so I'm sure it would be a decent little holiday regardless.
Very true. On to Aleix.
Yes, so Aleix, throughout the course of the weekend, had several absolutely massive crashes. His one in FP3, he said, was the worst crash of his career. A big high side on the Suzuki. And in this crash, you know, he beat himself up pretty bad. It was revealed after the race that he had damaged some ligaments in his thumb. So he went under the knife in Spain after the French GP to try and solve this. He had to retire from the race on the first lap, but this was due to technical issues. It's suspected it was a clutch issue and not any health problems. So this ligament damage wasn't severe enough to stop him racing, but it's one of those things, you know, where you have a week off, might as well go get it fixed. And in typical Espargaró brother style, Paul came along too, and Paul had arm pump surgery performed on his right arm, as is so common in MotoGP.
I want to talk about Danny Pedrosa.
Okay.
So Danny has had all of the, and this is not good for radio, but I'm holding my right arm. Danny has had the entire
sack
stuff. Yeah, a sack that holds your muscles in on your forearm. And there was a very interesting conversation that I saw that occurred online about how shorter riders had more problems with arm pump than taller riders, because taller riders actually end up being sort of, you know, so you sit up in the wind, and you don't have as much pressure on your arms. The shorter guys, they're behind the windscreen, and that's where the problem occurs with their forearms. I thought it was a very interesting theory.
I think it's also an issue of density, because, you know, you see shorter people, they're able to get quite tonka trucked, as the kids say, in the gym a lot easier than taller people, because it's all so compressed down. That's probably not the correct scientific term. But yeah, basically shorter people are more, I guess, condensed. And so therefore, their muscles are all, I don't know how it works, but no, the idea of shorter riders suffering from muscle fatigue issues definitely is supported by the very basic science I know from trying to go to the gym on occasion that hasn't worked
the,
well.
The term that I'd heard from taller riders was, we're our own personal air brake. So all you have to do is sit up behind the windscreen and woo, you know, and it, and instead of, you know, basically ranking your arm against the hand grip, your body is pulling back, and you're not having to do that kind of grip. Who knows? I mean, I've never been at that level. In as Mark Miller says so well, my shitty little world of racing, I was never that fast anyway. So, all right. We had a Michelin tire test post Le Mans.
Yep. Randy Depugnier was there testing the Suzuki, his first time on the Suzuki since the Sepang tests. Michael Laverty was there testing for Aprilia. And then we also had the Frankenstein Kawasaki / Akira bike there, which was being tested by some rider I had never seen before. I think he was French. He was certainly in a shark helmet and Furigan leathers, which generally suggests French. But yeah, there were no test times again, but Randy Depugnier seemed very pleased with the test, at least from Suzuki's point of view. So we'll have to wait and see, I guess. They're testing tyres after almost every round. So, you know, it's always one or two pictures after each round of a test rider on a black bike with nothing else.
And it's nice as we see the season go on to see new parts kind of coming out. And one of the things that we do, because we pay that much attention, thank you very much, is to see new parts come out. Honda, Marquez and Crutchlow.
Marquez and Crutchlow both got a new swing arm in Le Mans. You can tell it's the new swing arm because if you look on the swing arm, there's a small rectangular section cut out. It's about midway. I think it's on the right-hand side only, but I'm not 100% about that one. And this new swing arm is meant to help mostly in longer, faster corners. So most corners at Mugello, you'd say. But Honda brought it to Le Mans in order to assess its performance on a tighter, more stop-and-go track. Because, you know, the Honda philosophy of if it works one place, it has to work everywhere. Pretty good philosophy
right.
to have.
Yeah, great idea. No, sorry, not always necessarily true.
But unfortunately, all the Hondas this weekend suffered from lack of front-end grip. As we'll get to, Nicky Hayden was the second highest-placed Honda, which, yet again, if you thought this was 2008 or so, wouldn't be surprising, but it's 2015, and Nicky Hayden is on a open-spec Honda. There was a lot of crashes. Three out of the four factory bikes crashed. Cal Crutchlow's crash in particular was caused by his foot slipping off the rear brake, which caused him to quickly grab the front brake in response, therefore causing him to crash. So a bit of an unfortunate mistake from Cal Crutchlow.
All right, where do we go from here?
We go to some slightly breaking news. So it was announced, I think it was announced yesterday, that Andy Reid, who currently races for the Team Traction Control Racing, i.e. the Keith Flint Monster Energy team in British Supersport, he races a Yamaha R6 there. But this weekend at Donington World Superbike, he'll be riding for the Core Motorsport Honda team instead of Rathapat Willerot. Now, Rathapat Willerot has won a race this year. He won his home round. But Willerot, for some reason, won't be at Donington, and I can't for the life of me find out why. The FIM official, you know, pre-race, World Supersport, head to Donington, yada yada yada, press release. That was released on the 19th of May. It is currently the 20th of May. And in that press release, it said that Willerot would be there, but now suddenly he's not there. And I don't know why. And, yeah, Andy Reid's jumping from a Yamaha to a Honda, so obviously Yamaha UK have had to give him special dispensation to do that.
Interesting.
Yeah, so I'm going to try and find out why Willerot isn't there, but unfortunately, with World Supersport and maybe not one of the front runners in World Supersport, news on rider changes, you know, towards the mid and back of the field is a bit harder to come by.
All right, so should we walk through, and this is all about you.
Okay, yes.
Trust me, I hate walking through QP, and both you and Martin are much better at this than I am.
It's cool, no worries. So for Moto3 QP, we actually had a really interesting session. As Le Mans tends to do, it rained. It had rained before in the weekend, but the interesting thing with this qualifying session was it was dry for about the first 5 minutes, which gave most riders the chance to set one fast lap. However, riders such as Danny Kent decided to sit in the pits because obviously since Danny Kent's leading the championship, he gets a lot of people trying to follow him because it's Moto3 and that's just what's done. So Danny Kent sat in the pits, but he sat in the pits a little too long, so was not able to set a time in the dry. This caused him to qualify. It would be 30th on the grid because Carol Hanick would get taken off because he's an idiot and ran into Juan Guevara. Danny Kent would start from 30th, but Efren Vazquez, Zulfami Karadin, Danny Kent, Hiroki Ono, Philip Oschel, and Jorge Martin, all of those riders were technically outside of the qualifying time, as they set laps of 152.6 or lower. However, it's at the discretion of race control whether to allow riders to race, and, you know, obviously none of those riders are going to be a danger during the race. They're not going to get lapped. They're all competitive riders. So they were all allowed to race. But that did mean that we had Fabio Quartararo starting from pole in his home race, which was a big thing for him, obviously, rookie.
Totally.
You know, hopes of a nation on him. He was closely followed by Jorge Navarro, his teammate. You know, both of them taking advantage of the conditions. Obviously, Emilio Altzamora had a bit of a whisper in their ear, told them what to do, and they followed. And, you know, two places on the front row. Excellent job for the Australia Galicia 00 team. The front row was rounded off by Francesco Bagnaia, his first ever front row in the World Championship. I think this is Mahindra's first front row of the year. I'm almost certain of it. So a good result for him. Again, you know, maybe getting a bit lucky with the conditions and some riders like Danny Kent and Efren Vazquez not being the most strategic in the session. Then we had Jakob Kornfeil in fourth, Romano Fenati in fifth, finally getting a good qualifying. Local French rider Jules Daniello in sixth, that's his best ever qualifying. Nicola Antonelli in seventh, Miguel Oliveira 8th, Isaac Vinales 9th, and Tatsuki Suzuki in 10th. So that was your top 10. There weren't...
Do me a favor. Remind me if I'm misremembering, but Mahindra isn't actually a specialized bike. It's like a Honda with a rebranded name, right?
It used to be a Suter.
Okay.
So Mahindra originally, Mahindra originally came in, they came into the 125 championship and took over the Lambretta project. So they were basically running the bikes that were called Lambretta. Then the year after that, it switched to Moto 3. So Mahindra went into partnership with Aral, which they went into partnership with Aral because they were, Aral used to be a Ferrari F1 engineer or something. I don't know. And that bike was absolutely awful. That was just a complete pile. But then after that, Mahindra went into partnership with Suter. So at the start of Moto 3, Suter had developed their own bike, their own frame, which they sold to teams like Australia Galicia with a Honda engine. But then Suter also had their own engine, but no teams wanted it because it was a bit pricey. So then what Mahindra did is they came in and said, okay, Suter, put Mahindra badges on it. We'll call it a Mahindra. Bam, we're a factory entry. So that happened, and since then, Mahindra has slowly been moving away from Suter and are now somewhat independent. So they have Suter.
So they're building their own engines now.
More or less, I think they're still helped out a fair bit by Suter, but they have their own factory in Italy where they do testing and build some parts. But it's I think the Mahindra's not quite like KTM and Honda where you can go to one building and say everything is made here.
Okay. All right. Thank you. For folks out there in Motopod land, you just learned an awful lot.
Yeah. The history of Mahindra is interesting. There's some other stuff there about... Yeah, there's some other stuff there. Anyway, we'll go into that another day. But so outside of those top 10, you know, going down the order, it's pretty standard, you know. Ennea Bastianini, 18th, not taking the best... the conditions. Brad Binder suffered from a crash, so he was also quite far down the order in 25th. But, you know, with Danny Kent starting from the back of the grid and, you know, one or two riders who maybe got a bit lucky, a bit higher up on the grid, it really was set to be a really exciting race because you would have the likes of Danny Kent charging through and, you know, maybe some riders like Suzuki causing one or two incidents. And then we got to the race. And it was, it was pretty much what you expected. The first chicane after that very fast first corner proved to be a bit of a mess as Gabriel Rodrigo, Brad Binder, both went down together. I think they also, who else did they take out? They took out someone else, but that's someone else that I can't remember right now. They were able to remount. Then coming out of the chicane, Efren Vazquez managed to high side himself. Which happened to quite a few riders throughout the weekend, as we'll get to. But from there, a really interesting battle emerged at the front between Fenati, Bastianini, and Bagnaia, the Italian trio. Bastianini, again, you know, starting 18th and now fighting for a podium. He's made this a bit of a habit. Obviously, at Qatar, when he got his podium there, he'd fought back from, I think it was 16th on the grid, to eventually finish on the podium. That's a really Italian thing, you know, we've talked about that with Romano Fenati a lot as well. But yeah, Bagnaia has, in a couple of races this season, has shown that he and the Mahindra, together they work well as a package. Bagnaia struggled a fair bit last year on the KTM, but with the Mahindra, both he and the Mahindra seem to work well together, and they've been fighting pretty consistently at the front. So it was good to see them keep fighting at the front and be able to capitalise on that. And then it was also really good to see Danny Kent charging through the field from 30th to eventually finish up in 4th.
And a very clean fight through the field.
Mm. Certainly.
No argy bargy, just basically, you know, surgeon, scalpel, pardon me, I'm coming through, and I'm not gotten in your way.
Yeah, it was as clean as a Moto3 fight can be, I guess.
Which is saying something.
Yeah, it was a big disappointment for all the French riders, as Fabio Quartararo, he crashed while battling with those three Italians, and he was clearly upset because, you know, he definitely had the pace to fight for a podium, if not the win. Alexis Masbou, he also encountered problems. And Jules Daniello also crashed, which meant that all three French riders failed to finish the French Grand Prix. Quite disappointing for them. And better luck next time, I guess. Jorge Navarro, he also failed to finish, which was quite disappointing for him after starting on the front row. And then Remy Gardner, he got taken out. I think that was actually at that first chicane incident, but was able to remount for a bit. And then we had Philip Ertl actually had a really good ride. He was down in those riders that missed out. So he started down in, I think it was about 32nd, and he managed to ride up to 10th position, which is a really good ride, and probably should have gotten a bit more media attention than it actually did.
I was curious, is Darren Binder a relation of Brad Binder?
Yes, he is Brad's younger brother, who is riding for Brad's ex-team.
Ah, okay.
So he literally took over Brad's seat at the what used to be Ambrosia Racing is now Otox Reset Drink Team.
Okay.
So the Moto3 race, it was really exciting. You know, three Italians on the podium. I think that this will give both Fanardi and Bastianini a lot of confidence heading into Mugello. Both those riders seem to always do really well at Mugello, especially Fanardi with his now infamous arm folding incident his first year. Hopefully he repeats that. Hopefully this does give Fanardi the kind of the spark that he needs to get back some of that attitude and spunk that made him such an exciting rider.
Arm pulling incident. Well played, Harry.
Thanks. This was also KTM's first win of the season. KTM finally kind of caught up from the lack of testing. As we've said multiple times, the tests at the start of the year for Moto3 and Moto2 were pretty much exclusively rained out. And with a pretty new bike this year, KTM really needed those tests. But now it looks like they've improved that. And then Romano Fanardi, Andrea Migno, Miguel Oliveira and Brad Binder, they all also had a private test at Almeria after the French GP. Because KTM are currently looking to upgrade their frame. But the frame that they bought to the official ERTA post-Jerez test was not really liked. And obviously with only one upgrade allowed this season, they really have to get it right. So we might see one or two more private tests.
All right, we are dwelling on Moto3 way too much. You ready to do standings?
Yes, I'll do them. Quickly, there's not much to talk about in the standings. Danny Kent leads 104 points ahead of Enea Bastianini on 67 points. Really solid lead for Kent. You know, he's certainly the title favourite. Then we have Efren Vazquez. He obviously dropped to third, as did Efren Vazquez, 60 points third. Fabio Quartararo, 52 points in fourth. Both of them, you know, obviously failed to score, as we said. Then in fifth, Romano Fanardi jumps up with 51 points. So the fight really seems to be for second in the championship. Something pretty incredible would have to happen for Kent to not win. Yep.
Not that Moto3 is not worth dwelling on, because that's where some of the best drama is, frankly.
Certainly. Both on and off track.
Indeed. And in the paddock, no less. Exactly. All right. Moto2, you want to run through QP?
Sure. So for qualifying, we had Alex Rins and Sam Lowes both set an identical lap time of 137.114. Alex Rins was able to claim pole position due to setting the second fastest lap out of the two. Sam Lowes was quite miffed that he didn't get a watch, which is, you know, understandable. But yeah, Alex Rins, his first pole position, rookie year in Moto2, really impressing, as we've said, really calm and collected riding.
How many watches can you end up with? I mean, it's like really...
A lot. I think they start giving them to the team once they collect a certain amount, because yeah, okay, at the end of the day, only two wrists.
Pardon me, I interrupted you, but I mean, it's like, okay, I got a lot of watches at this point.
Yeah, certainly. Then Johan Zarco in third, Teacher Abbott in fourth, Takaki Nakagami in fifth. Nakagami's had a lot of really solid qualifyings this year, but as we'll get to, he fades in the race. Thomas Luthi in sixth, Luis Salom seventh, good result from Salom, Xavier Simeon eighth, Julian Simon ninth, and Randy Krumenacker in tenth, really good result from Krumenacker. Then we had Jonas Folger, double race winner, down in 15th spot, so not really where Jonas Folger wanted to be.
I was a little surprised that Kallio wasn't quicker, because this is usually a very good track for him.
Kallio's struggling this year, you know? Both he and Rabat haven't really gelled with the 2015 Calix frame. They've been really struggling for front-end feel, and obviously Kallio switched over to the Italitrans team, and, you know, maybe that transition isn't going as smoothly as he thought, so it's been a tough year for the Finn.
So one of the things that people should understand is that, well, you look at, okay, all the bikes that are on Calix frames, not all of those Calix frames are the same. Each one of them can have some tweaks and differences and variances in what version they have. So don't think of them all as being, you know, cookie cutter. They are all a little bit different.
Yep, definitely. Yeah, and not only are there those little differences, but there's also big differences between some people on the 2014 frame and some people on the 2015 frame. So there's a whole lot of different variations there.
I know. People like to think that, you know, it's just one thing. No, not even close. Not even close. Carry on.
Then we got to the race, and it was an okay race. We had Johan Zarco break away at the start, and then there was a bit of a battle. Tom Luthi had a really impressive ride. He caught Zarco and then, you know, just set a steady pace, ended up winning by almost 2 seconds ahead of Tito Rabat, with Johan Zarco in third. But the real drama of the race came between Franco Morbidelli and the pair of Paginas Amarias riders, i.e. Alex Rins and Luis Salom. Franco Morbidelli definitely has shades of Marco Simoncelli, both in nationality and in quite aggressive riding style. So Morbidelli was bad.
Did you actually just say that Franco Morbidelli clashed with Alex Rins?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, they didn't. They didn't physically touch, but they were battling, and then Rins fell off. Then Rins remounted. That was coming out of the first chicane. Morbidelli did, however, physically clash with Luis Salom, as the move seemed kind of funny when you first watched it. It seemed like maybe Morbidelli was being a bit too hard on Salom in terms of the move he put through. But when you watched it back, it kind of seemed like Salom wasn't really giving it his all at overtaking. It was kind of a bit of 50-50. But Salom's bike did seem to go over the top of Morbidelli, as did Salom himself. So Morbidelli was lucky to stay on there.
I'm going to reserve my opinion on Julian. Too many mistakes lately.
Julian Simon, yeah, he's had ever since he broke his leg at Barcelona when he came together with Kenan Sofuoglu in that Moto2 race, he's kind of really, really struggled after being really strong at the start of the Moto2 championship when he and Elias battled for the title, and then, you know, obviously being a 1-2-5 champion.
Yeah, and this was kind of a pseudo semi-damp condition. I mean, dryish, but not very warm.
No, it hadn't fully heated up. It was warmer than it had been at a lot of points in the weekend, but it wasn't probably ideal. Sam Lowes did take a tyre gamble because the track temperature did seem to be rising a bit. He opted for a different tyre to the majority. That gamble didn't quite pay off, and he was only able to finish fourth, so he was a bit disappointed with that result. Then we had Takaki Nakagami in 7th, a good result from Nakagami. But I've noticed with Nakagami is that he qualifies well, starts the race well, but after about 5 laps, he starts to drop back quite badly. And Nakagami was one who was probably helped out a bit by both Rins and Salom falling off.
All right, well, I had a blast with Moto2.
Yeah?
I enjoyed watching it. It was fun. And I was doing that at 4 in the morning.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't a bad race. It's just that the battle for the lead wasn't quite as intense as the battle for fifth.
Nope. Well, and it was kind of like the MotoGP race too. I was like, oh, all right. Yeah.
So before we move on to MotoGP, we will go to the Moto2 standings. Johann Zarco, the only rider in the top three, certainly, to finish in the top 10 at every race, with 89 points. First, Thomas Luthi, second, 68 points. Jonas Folger in third with 57. Folger unfortunately crashed out of the race in Le Mans. So despite having 2 wins, he's also had 2 non-point scoring finishes. So that has definitely hampered his championship hopes a bit. Sam Lowe's in fourth with 54 points, tied with Franco Morbidelli, also on 54. Then Tito Rabat in sixth with 53 points. Alex Rins drops to seventh after being second in the championship for a long time with 49 points. So the Moto2 championship a lot closer than the Moto3.
It is super tight. Nobody is running away yet.
No, definitely everyone is still within striking distance.
Yeah. Yep. All right. Let's see if we can jam through our qualifying for MotoGP.
Yes. So because of his crash, Alicia Spargo had to go into Q1. You also had the likes of Nicky Hayden in there, obviously, on the open bike. Scott Redding. Scott Redding is having a really disappointing season. I thought Scott Redding would be doing better. Scott Redding did not manage to advance out of Q1, which I think was a huge shame. He actually finished behind Nicky Hayden. Obviously, Nicky has access to that extra soft tyre, but you'd think that with the advantages Scott has in terms of factory support and slightly better electronics, that Scott would be able to be ahead of Nicky. He wasn't.
I heard something about him having a left finger issue, a left hand issue prior to the weekend.
Maybe. I don't know. I hadn't heard that. That could be possible. Overall, it seems like the factory Hondas, i.e. Redding's bike, Crutchlow's bike, then obviously Danny and Mark, they really struggled for front-end feel for the entire weekend, and it seems like that's kind of emerging as a problem with the Honda, which is, a bit of a big problem.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
But we did have Petrucci and Alicia Spargo advancing through to Q2. Maverick Viñales just missed out on advancing. Viñales was pretty gutted. Viñales really likes the Le Mans track, as we found out at the start of the year when Martin did his wonderful interview with him. Then we had Marco Melandri once again bringing up the rear, a 137.522, which was 3.5 seconds slower than Petrucci's lap. Yes, so in Q2, we had Marc Marquez storm to another pole position, half a second ahead of Andrea Dovizioso. Dovizioso once again back on that front row on the Ducati, ahead of Jorge Lorenzo in third. Despite being in third, Jorge Lorenzo said that this was one of his worst ever qualifyings and that he wasn't happy at all. There were a lot of mistakes on the lap. There were a lot of problems with the bike. But even with all those problems, Jorge still finished third in the session, which is pretty good, you know? And kind of shows that maybe the air quotes old Jorge is back and that he's not quite in the deep crisis that maybe some people thought he was at the start of the season.
The bottom line is, if you're on the front row, you're fine.
Yeah, pretty much. Then we had Cal Crutchlow in fourth. Crutchlow again, pretty disappointed. Andrea Iannone in fifth. Iannone, as we said on last week's show, dislocated his left shoulder in a private Ducati test. So to come back and score a fifth spot, really good. As we'll get to in the race, Maniac Joe, he can ride through a pain barrier, that's for sure. Then in sixth was Bradley Smith ahead of Valentino Rossi. Danny Pedrosa on his return in eighth. Maybe not quite the ideal return that Pedrosa had. Then Daniele Petrucci ninth, Alicia Spargo 10th, Yoni Hernandez 11th. And Paul Espargaró in 12th. pole again, a bit underwhelming, in all honesty.
Yeah. Okay, so, Harry, I'm going to explain something to you.
Okay.
This is when Grandpa speaks up. The top three in Q2 are really all about bragging rights. They don't care if they're one, two, or three. Really, yeah, is it great to get pole? No. But if you're on the front row, boom, you've won. You've essentially won that little mini race. That's why somebody like Cal, which starting in fourth, while I may bitch about it, is still a great place to start, because who are you starting behind? Mark Marquez. So, and what happened going into the first corner? Anyway,
I think that it was actually Rossi who pushed Marquez a bit wide. Rossi did spend a lot of the post-race interviews apologizing for pushing Marquez wide. I'm not sure if that was the incident he was talking about, though.
Carry on.
So it was a pretty weird start to the race, because you had Marquez make quite a good start, but then he ran pretty deep into a corner. One interesting thing to note is that throughout most of the season, the Repsol Honda bikes have been running carbon rings around their brakes to help keep the temperature in, because obviously carbon brakes need to be at an incredibly high temperature to operate, and Honda have been having problems with the brakes getting too cold. But for this race, they didn't have those carbon covers on. So I wonder if, along with the Honda seeming to lack front-end feel, that the removal of these carbon disc warmers, essentially, also hindered Marquez, because he did have a fair few moments, mostly on the brakes, it seemed to me.
I only saw those in practice. I've never seen those in a race.
I don't know. I'd have to go back and check, but I'll go back and check ahead of next week's episode if they do run them in the race.
Okay.
But yeah, that was just something interesting that I noticed, and maybe that played a factor. But beyond that, it was, as I said, Marquez pushed wide a couple of times in the first lap. He dropped quite far down. Then we had the departure of Danny Pedrosa exiting the chicane, much like Efren Vazquez in Moto3. He crashed, but, fair play to Pedrosa. He got back on that bike, even despite coming back from injury. He walked over to the bike. He didn't quite run, but, you know, he got back on the bike pretty quick.
I think it went over and looked at it and went, oh, god damn it.
Yeah. I'm sure that there were one or two people at Honda's headquarters in Japan who had
thinking the same thing.
Yes, yeah. Who had maybe a similar sentiment.
Yeah.
One of the most surprising things of this season, to be honest, is Stefan Bradl. He crashed on one of the opening laps, and Bradl has had kind of a terrible start to the season. Even Loris Baz, his rookie teammate, has managed to now score more points than the German, which is a bit surprising. And I think it also highlights the magnificent job that that Alicia Spargo was doing on that forward Yamaha last year.
I'm totally pumped for Alicia. I mean, I think if you put him on a Tech 3, he would easily podium.
Yeah, I personally think that Alicia is a better rider than younger brother Pol. A lot of people seem to argue counter to that, but just based on some younger brothers in the past few years, I feel that the whole saying of, you know, my brother's 1 second quicker than me is maybe not accurate, and that maybe it is actually the older brother who's quicker.
I think it would be fun to see Alicia and Pol both in Tech 3. I think that would be a very good pairing. Maybe I'll have a talk with somebody.
trying to get in on that manager money.
Yeah. All right. So all in all, what are we looking at on standings at this point?
Okay. If we're jumping straight to standings, we have Valentino Rossi once again leading the championship, 102 points. Valentino Rossi heads to Mugello as championship leader. This is the first time since, was it 2008 or 2009? I really should have checked the stats. Anyway, I think...
Nine.
2009 that Rossi has led the championship going into Mugello. Funnily enough, 2009 was also when Rossi took his last Mugello win, which was his seventh win in a row in the MotoGP class at Mugello. So, yeah, the stage is really set for an epic Mugello battle. You know, we had Jorge Lorenzo put in another dominant performance in France and win by almost 4 seconds. And Mugello's a track that Lorenzo usually goes well at, and then, you know, that in contrast with Rossi leading the championship, the home crowd, then with this kind of X factor of the Ducatis that have had a private test there, as well as Marquez, who we'll get to in a second, but he obviously had a tough race and is now pretty far down in the championship. I think Mugello's going to be hopefully an exciting race for MotoGP, as there's certainly a lot of riders who have a hat in it.
I think we should come back to something because we haven't talked about it enough. As of late, Lorenzo has been back in metronome mode.
Yes, the last two races especially.
Yeah, so it's just lap after lap after lap with maybe a tenth between them, and he can just keep doing them. That is kind of frightening to an opponent.
Yeah, I mean, it's maybe a little boring for a race spectator, but it's just incredible, as you say, his consistency that he is able to put in. It's just dominating. You know, as soon as Lorenzo's able to get out in front, he's able to take the lines he wants on that Yamaha to maximize its speed. And when he can do that, he's pretty hard to catch, as has been shown now 2 weekends in a row.
His whole... Okay, so I have to qualify first. I have to get first into the first corner, and when you can check out. And the thing that we used to hate, and we still do, frankly, but it hasn't happened so much this year, is what we call processional racing, right? Where, you know, somebody gets out, and then you just kind of watch the battles behind. We would much rather like to see the battles like we had at the beginning of the year.
Yeah, I personally think that, or think/hope, that Mugello will be like that with the, you know, with the added Italian passion, shall we say. I think that hopefully we'll return a bit to that. But it has been good to see Jorge put in these dominant performances. You know, he's definitely known for them, and I think it's good to see him back to 100%.
I just don't want to see him run away with it.
Yeah, that's true as well.
I don't want to see anyone run away with it. I want to see it go down to the second to last race of the year.
I think that that will happen, though. I think that this resurgence of Lorenzo will, you know, will close up the championship between him and Rossi. And then hopefully with Rossi and Lorenzo battling, it'll give Mark a chance to catch up as well. And then, you know, you have the ever-present threat of Andrea Dovizioso there.
Having a Ducati that actually provides a chance to kind of break up some of the front runners is very, very cool. And like you say, Gigi basically did his magic. I'm stoked for those teams.
Yeah, it is really good for Ducati, and good for racing as well. To be back up there, you know, it's a bit more exciting now that there's three bikes up there, more nationalities, more riders in potential for the race win. One thing that we didn't touch upon was the amazing battle between Marquez and Andrea Iannone during the MotoGP race.
Yeah.
They were going at it Moto2 style, you know, harkening back to what, 3-4 years ago now, when they were both battling it out in Moto2. And this was considering that Andrea Iannone had his recently dislocated shoulder. You know, he was still gritting his teeth and certainly putting it to Mark. Mark was not having an easy time of, you know, getting ahead or trying to stay ahead of Iannone.
Okay. Yeah. So you've got a jacked up shoulder. You've got a completely screwed up finger. Who's going to win this battle? You have put into our show notes here a stat attack that I'm not even going to try and tackle.
But unfortunately, I can't take credit for this, as it was Martin who put in the stat attack. I think that I kind of understand what it's going for, but I think that we'll wait till Martin is back on for him to run down it himself, as I'm sure that he will have some extra data, but his stat attack has kind of put me to shame. I feel quite embarrassed, honestly. I feel like I've lost my status as the biggest nerd on this show, so perhaps I'm going to have to go research the correlation between wind direction and Moto 2 results or something obscure like that, because this is pretty impressive.
Yeah. I want to just very briefly mention Moto America at VIR. This is the racing in the United States for those of you that are overseas. Your top 10, Josh Hayes, Cameron Beaubier, who some of you may remember from Red Bull Rookies Cup, Roger Hayden, Danny Essick, Jake Lewis, Chris Ulrich, Bernat Martinez, Stefano Mesa, Elena Myers, bless her, we need to get her back on the show, and Matthew Orange. Race 2, Josh Hayes, Roger Hayden, Cameron Beaubier, Jake Lewis, Danny Essick, Chris Ulrich, Stefano Mesa, Elena Myers, Bernat Martinez, and Huntley Nash. Well done. We've got some work to go on there. What we did have that we really haven't talked about, we have no results up here on screen, is the Northwest 200 just concluded.
Yes. It was overall, it was a good weekend. There were one or two hiccups with the BBC streaming, particularly towards the end of the, I think it was the second Supersport race that the BBC stream cut to football on the last lap.
No.
Yeah, so that was a bit of a bummer. But no, seriously, the BBC Northern Ireland coverage, you know, it's not like most BBC things where it's region locked to the UK. Anyone can watch it, and it is really, really good coverage.
It's outstanding. In fact, you know what? Let's run the interview.
Okay.
This is Brandon Cretu, an American racer, based out of Michigan, I think. Both before and after he ran. Jim Race talking to Brandon Cretu, who is at the Northwest 200, pulling into the paddock, right?
Yep.
Riding a Bimota BB3, a bike with a totally bespoke frame, an SS1000R engine. You put together quite the deal for not only this, for the Northwest 200, but also for the TT. Tell me about it, man.
Yeah, no, this year actually, you know, just when I thought everything was kind of falling apart, I wouldn't be racing, everything, you know, everything kind of pulled together, and I think I have probably one of my best, you know, my best programs ever, and I get to do, you know, all the big international races, the Northwest, TT, Ulster, and Macau. So,
oh, you're going to do Ulster too?
Yeah, we're doing all the big four ones, so you know, I'll be at all four events this year.
You're a brave man.
I mean, I've done the Ulster before, so I'm not, you know, I already have some familiarity. This is what actually my most, I guess, nervous event of the year, because I've never been here before, and that, yeah, just from never being here, you always get a little bit, you know, just first couple laps, bobbling your way around, trying to figure out where the hell you're going and how fast you can go through some of the turns. It's, you know, definitely a little, always makes me a little nervous the first time I go somewhere. So I'm excited now that I kind of know where I'm going. I'm enjoying it a little bit more.
You said something yesterday that actually kind of totally creeped me out. You're like 180 miles an hour, and it was raining.
I wasn't a big fan of that, to be honest with you. I mean, granted, I've only ridden in the rain like, you know, literally maybe 5 or 6 times in my life. It's kind of still a learning experience for me. But it was, you know, it was literally at one point pouring down rain, and we were going, you know, the one straight here, you're going 180, 190. I mean, I think Jessup a couple years ago hit like 208 on the fucking straightaway. So it's, you know, it's pretty ridiculous.
And you said that there's a couple corners that you just don't get. The roundabout, is that one that is just like totally tripping you up?
No, the magic roundabout, the really long one down by, I think, University, that one's fun. I mean, I mean, I'll attain any kind of, you know, respectable corner speed, I would say, but I'm not too disappointed with how I've started off. But the chicanes that they add in, basically there's a, you know, a couple places where it would otherwise be just a long straightaway, you know, for, you know, however many miles, and they add these chicanes in to slow it down. And the chicanes are really kind of unnatural feeling, like they don't feel like they don't flow with the road, because they're not used any time of the year other than just for the Northwest,
right?
So they're just kind of like, you, they're like point and shoot, like you almost come to a stop, you shoot in the chicane and you shoot right back out, so it doesn't have any kind of like actual flow to it. It kind of ruins the flow of the whole course, but if they weren't there, it'd just be a, you know, sixth gear for however many minutes, you know. So I can understand why they put them in. It's just, it's a shame they couldn't do it a little bit more, you know, a little bit better to give it, you know, to give it more flow.
Yeah, I had a chat with you last night. I was actually calling Gary just to say hello, and you were sitting next to him. my apologies for my derogatory comment towards you, but
trust me, I get it plenty from him, so it's all right.
Good to hang out with him. I assume he's giving you some excellent advice.
Yeah, we actually don't really, we talk a little bit about it, but we talk, you know, mainly about other shit besides, you know, the track. You know, we become pretty good friends over the years, so it's, yeah, I just went in there to hang out and, you know, have a cup of tea with him. So yeah, it was, just, you know, we were just chilling out, getting away from the paddock a bit.
It was kind of funny. Yeah. He said right off the bat, he's like, oh, I'm sitting here with Brandon. And I'm like, oh no.
No, he had you on speakerphone the whole time, so I heard everything he said.
damn it. Seeley, he's fast. And that's a guy that came over and ran Daytona like 8 years ago and kicked ass over there, too.
Yeah, Seeley is just absolutely unreal. Like, he passed me in the wet, and I was just like, I mean, the dude is just stupid fast. Like, and the times he put in are just unreal. I basically lie every day to get in the paddock, and then I leave my car in here because I'm not supposed to drive cars in the paddock. So I just tell them I have fuel in the back, and then I leave my car.
What is your hire car?
Ford shitbox. I don't know. A Ford Fiesta, something tiny. It's all right though; it gets the job done.
All right. So
I had a Skoda when I went to the test in Anglesey, and it was actually pretty nice.
Yeah. Those are actually cool, aren't they?
People here in the paddock don't seem to want to get out of the way of a car. So
yeah. So talk to me about your team. How did you put the team together? How did you work this deal out?
You know, when everything kind of just, you know, fell apart with EBR, you know, I didn't think I was gonna have a ride, and I just posted up about, you know, I was looking for a ride, and then literally within hours of me, you know, losing my ride with EBR, I get a call from Ben Wiley, whom I rode with and was kind of quasi teammates with back in 2011. And he told me about the Bimota deal, and they were actually still kind of working out. Like, they literally didn't get the bikes from Bimota until, I mean, like 2 weeks before our test at Anglesey. So it was like, it was all very last minute. But, you know, it all worked out in the end. And, yeah, these told me what they were doing. They were doing all the international road races. And, you know, I had some sponsors who were already on board, thankfully. I think you met Rob Wilson from Scotland.
Yep.
You were over.
Yep.
Yeah. And he is, like, partners with someone at a shop in Scotland. And they, Street Evolution Motorcycles. So they're helping me out. And then Hell Performance is, you know, back on board, helping me out a bit this year. So without them, I definitely wouldn't be here. So they kind of definitely stepped up and, you know, got me sorted and helping out the team a bit and, you know, keeping us going for the year.
Okay. Who's your crew chief?
Well, it's kind of a mixed match of people this year. I mean, I would say Ben has two guys helping us out. Throughout the year, I got Andy and Alan, and then we have a BMW like expert, I guess you could say, but he knows all the electronics and everything on the BMW, so he'll be at the TT, and I think he's not coming here, but he'll be at the TT and the Ulster Macau, I believe. So yeah, we got it sorted. We're kind of, you know, feeling our way through the year and, you know, just kind of putting together what we can. But we don't have a dedicated crew chief follow me at each round, but you know, well, we should be all right though.
Okay. So we briefly talked about the chassis last night, but the chassis on that thing has to be fucking trick.
Yeah, no, it's the way I figured out how to describe it when I was talking to Peter Hickman after I saw him at the BSB test right before I tested the bike, and he tested the BMW Moto the end of last year, and he rides a BMW in BSB, and or he rides one now. He used to ride a Honda as well, and he described it as a BMW engine electronics, which their engine electronics are amazing, and in a Honda chassis. So that's the one thing I think a lot of people didn't like about the BMW from talking to people, was it was like a very soft feeling chassis. Like it didn't have like pinpoint accuracy. Like it kind of did everything you wanted it to do, but it just kind of did it all right. Like it, you know, if you wanted to be on a certain line, you could kind of get it close, but it was never like spot on. Now granted, you know, probably the super bikes are a little bit better, but I got a chance to ride like a super stock, like club level bike. And I can tell you the Moto chassis was, you know, above and beyond a better feeling.
Okay.
Chassis than the BMW.
And so, like standard S1000R, standard S1000R electronics.
Yeah. Yep. Standard BMW electronics. And standard engine. So it's not the HP4, but it's the standard S1000 electronics.
Do you have somebody that's doing your data for you?
Yeah. Well, we have the guy that here. We don't have a data guy at the TT. We will.
Okay.
So yeah, this is just kind of our, like to think of this as just our warm up, you know, round, just to kind of feel out the rest of the bugs.
Your vision.
Yeah.
Oh, well, I'm sure Gary would have a comment on that as well.
Yeah, he's got a comment on everything. So.
Yeah, of course. The weather today, what's it looking like?
It's sunny-ish, a little starting to get a little overcast. It's windy though. It's really windy. So we'll see how that plays out. But supposed to be nice all day, like, you know, semi-sunny and clear. So that's good.
Cool.
So I think we'll be rain-free for today.
And what's the schedule as the week goes on?
Today practice is at 11:15 for that's when the first superbike practice is at, I think.
Okay.
And then that's in about a little over 2 hours. The road's closing about half an hour. And then the race I think is around 5 PM. That's the superstock race, and that's it for today.
Okay.
And then Saturday we have I forget how it works. It's like a morning warm up or something, and then we have the two superbike races and one more superstock race. So yeah, Saturday will be a busy day.
Okay. So when I talked to you last night, you said you'd been back in like 42nd, but that would put you in at least a second wave, right?
Yeah, right now I'm sure I'm going to be in the second wave. That's what I'm shooting for today, is just to kind of get up there and in the grid a little bit. Like I said, ideally I'd like to be in the top 30. And you know, I'm right near some guys who have been here, you know, hadn't been here before. So I don't have any doubt that I'll go faster today in practice and qualifying. I mean, everyone else will too, but you know, I have a lot of time I can drop. So it's not too worried about though. Like I said, this is just for me, you know, first year here, just a warm up for the TT, you know, getting myself ready, getting my body ready, and getting my mind in shape. So I'm not too, you know, obviously I want to do as well as I can, but for me it's just a warm up.
And as you say, a warm up. What more do you think you could get out of the bike besides yourself?
Refining the setup a little bit, you know, this isn't a super bumpy course. So I'm not too concerned with, you know, getting it sorted out here with the bumps, but I know we'll have to get it a little bit better at the TT. It's a little bit harsh right now on some bumps, and it's a really stiff chassis. I think that's why. So we'll just have to kind of feel our way through that. But I mean, so far, you know, even though I'm not really quite up to speed yet, but so far the I don't have too many complaints about the bike, but you know, there's always a bike's never gonna be perfect, so there's always work to be done.
What's the chassis balance on it? 50-50?
Yeah, I'd say, you know, we're trying to get a little bit more weight towards the front. It does tend to, it wants to wheelie a lot, but it's not that bad. It doesn't wheelie as much as the EBR did. EBR wheelied a lot on the roads, so it's not doing that as bad, but it does that's something that we did kind of sort that out at Anglesey a little bit, so we're finding our way through that as well.
Cool. What tires are running?
Dunlop.
Okay. The UK and Tex?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, it sounds like you've got a proper package.
Yeah. It should be good. You know, we're not a full, I wouldn't say we're a full factory team. We got factory support, and you know, they're behind us for the most part and helping us out. So definitely want to thank Pomoda, and you know, everyone loves the bikes. Everyone stops by and looks at them. So that's cool. It's nice to be part of something different and, you know, kind of wave a different flag, you know.
Totally. Oh, dude, you're riding Pomoda. You're riding Pomoda. I mean, seriously.
Yeah.
Are you having fun?
Yeah, I'm having fun. Yeah, it's definitely the Irish hospitality is in full force. So it's been a good time so far.
I mean, seriously, you're a kid from the northeast of the U.S. and you're riding in the Northwest 200. Can you not have fun doing that?
Well, if you're riding in the rain and it's cold and windy, and I came back home, it was like, you know, 90 degrees and sunny, and I was wearing shorts and T-shirt. Then you kind of second guess, like, why do I do this again? But then when it's sunny and nice out and you're, you know, starting to get at it, and then you're out at night with your friends, then you're like, oh, this is why I do this.
I believe this is when I say, don't be a pussy, right?
Yep.
All right. Well, listen, Brandon Greatview, your sponsors.
Yeah. Like I said before, Hell Performance and Street Evolution Motorcycles, they're, you know, by far beyond the only reason I'm here, you know, and definitely Pomoda and Ben Wiley and the team for, you know, getting me on board this year and giving me a chance, you know, kind of show what, you know, what they know I can do. And, you know, I haven't really had a chance to show my full potential yet, you know, at any of the events. So, definitely thank them, Bell Helmets, Moto Liberty, RSD, Chi, you know, Moto D, all my other sponsors that definitely helped me out. You know, wouldn't be here without them, so they're a big part of what I do.
Cool. As well as Motopod, right?
Yes, as well as Motopod. As well as Jim Race.
All right, brother. Have a great and fun safe today, and we will talk to you soon. I'm going to hear what you do as the week goes on.
All right, will do. Thanks, Jim.
All right, mate. Jim Race for Motopod with Brandon Gray, too. You survived your Northwest 200.
What's up?
How you doing, brother?
What are you talking about? I'm still. What are you talking about? It's gonna cost me a fortune.
Well, I'm calling you on Skype. You're on your cell phone, right?
Yeah, I'm at home.
Oh, all right. Well then.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, everyone thinks I stayed over there. Unfortunately, I'm not a rock star like Gary Johnson. Sorry, except at work.
I figure you're gonna head straight over to the aisle from there.
Well, yeah, that'd be nice, but that would require me to take off like 7 weeks or 6 weeks worth of work, so it wasn't that wasn't happening.
Okay. Well, it's funny. I just got off the phone with Gary too. I'm going to have Gary on the show tomorrow night.
All right.
So, how did it go? And you give me the short version, but obviously, I think things went fairly well. Dude, you finished in the top 20. That's awesome.
Yeah. No, actually, yeah, everything went really well. I mean, you know, given all the circumstances surrounding, you know, the weather and conditions and learning the track and then all the red flags from, you know, people crashing their brains out, you know, I can't complain. You know, I kind of had an idea of, you know, where I wanted to finish and what lap times I wanted to run. And I didn't really have any super high expectations of what I was going to do because I didn't really, you know, just kind of, for me, it was just getting ready for the TT. And, you know, by the end of the Superstock race, I kind of surprised myself because I was even on, older, you know, tires, weren't even brand new tires I was racing on in the Superstock race. So I was, you know, definitely can't complain.
You hit a quicker lap time than I think you thought you were going to. I mean, you essentially hit your ideal lap time based upon your sector times.
Yeah, like my every time I went out, every lap was my fastest lap. So yeah. like every time I went out, every lap I did was my fastest lap. So every I just got faster and faster and faster.
So coming off of that, the bike obviously is coming together. The team is coming together, which is yep. is obviously way more important. Is the entire same team going to be heading over to the Isle with you?
Yeah, we're going to be the same team all year, so we'll be going. We'll be at the same team as Northwest, PT, Ulster, and Macau. So we'll be at all the big four all together. So it'll be a good year.
You got a long year ahead of you, my friend.
Yep.
The downtime from Ulster to Macau is going to be quite a wait, isn't it?
I'm trying to think. Yeah, it is. That's probably my longest wait for this year because I'll be at the Ulster and then I have almost about 3 months. So that's quite a while to wait. Who knows? Maybe come September or October, I'll try to get over and fly over and do a test with the team again or something. But have to see how things work out. But that's not out of the question to do. We might do something like that.
I saw you mentioned something in public the other day, probably on the Weir VBS, I'm sure. You're like, I've become a shitty short circuit racer, but I'm really good at the roads, or as good at the roads as I think I can be. Why do you think that is? Is it a vision thing or a speed thing or what?
I wish I could answer that question. I have no idea. Like I can go on like, I mean,
you're not the only one that's like this. There are guys that are fast as fuck on real roads and then are crap on short circuits.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I know. I mean, there's quite a few out there, and there's quite a few that are good at both, and there's quite a few that can only do the roads. And usually there's those guys who have done, the short circuits and can't go to the roads, and then they can't do it. So it's a weird dynamic. I don't know. I don't think I was ever, I was always, half decent, rider on the short circuits. I was never, doing anything out of the box or, anything, kind of spectacular. But, I think I found, I guess I found my niche because I don't think I'm too shabby riding the roads. I think I hold my own. So, but, when it comes to short circuit stuff, I just don't, I honestly just have zero interest in it anymore. I just just with all of it, I have zero interest in even one. Like I like riding and testing, if I'm gonna go, get ready and prep for the TT or Macau or anything. But as far as going competing and races, I have zero interest in it.
Talk to me about something that, I've zoned out on Miller with this a million times, but I'm curious from another perspective. Talk to me about what happens. There are very few people that listen to the show that have any idea what it's like to spend a couple of, unless they're doing something really squiddly, a couple of miles above 160, 170, 180 miles an hour. Time does slow down, and it's shocking how it happens, and I've had it happen to me before. And I'm just curious from another racer's standpoint, what that feels like to you.
I don't know. It's weird here. Cause it's when you first do it, for me this year, it's obviously the Northwest, So when I first did it this last week, it's obviously, it's like an overwhelming experience cause everything is, nothing's slowing down. Everything's going 180 miles an hour. And then as you're kind of, as your brain kind of gets up to speed, then you're just it's not, then everything becomes easier to do when you're at that speed. You're not getting that. You're staying relaxed. You're loosening the body. You're seeing every little pothole and everything, and you know, noticing the different lines you can take. Whereas the first time you do that, you're like just trying to stay in the middle of the road,
holy shit.
Yeah. And like hoping for the best, you know. But once you get it, you know, if you're a rider who can do that and you know get your mind in gear for that type of riding, then once you start doing it, then it all just, you know, it becomes easier after a couple laps, and then you're just like, oh, this all right. That's why, you know, I was talking to, you know, Gaz and Dean Harrison, a couple other riders about it when I was over there, just, you know, just in our normal conversation, and how, you know, it was my first time in the Northwest, and everyone kept saying, Aaron always says, well, you know, this is, you know, you'll have your best year at the TT, you know, just starting out, because your mind and your body and everything else is already in gear, like, for those kind of speeds and that kind of riding. They're like, no, like, otherwise the Northwest is...
Time changes when you're going that fast. There's not a lot of people that get the opportunity to experience that. You did it, however, in the rain, and that still kind of just blows me away.
Yeah, it blows me away too. I don't particularly enjoy it, and I didn't particularly enjoy it. Like, I don't know, the rain. I got to test the Bermuda in the rain at Anglesey back in April when I tested the team, and I didn't, like, I don't mind it, like, that much. Like, I don't mind riding in the rain on a short circuit track, and I'm actually all right at it because I don't, you know, it doesn't bother me. Like, but the problem is I get overconfident, and then I'll start pushing it, and I would say, like, almost every time I've ridden in the rain, I've crashed, but it's been because I started pushing it too much.
There are a couple of places on the Northwest 200 circuit where what happens, and there's nothing you can do about it, where just as you're shifting through the gears and as you're coming over these tiny little rises that you know, in a higher car might seem like absolutely nothing, that your front end just keeps coming up and up and up, and I can't even picture doing that in the rain.
All right. Yeah, I would say, luckily for me, when I rode in the rain there, and like, you know, the pouring rain or you know, whatever, really wet track, when I had my wets on, I was still learning the track, so I wasn't like fully up to speed yet, which probably maybe kept me safer, because I was just kind of bumbling my way around and learning it, which, you know, probably number one helped me learn the track a little more, and you know, kept things a little slower until I did know the track, you know, better. Not that it's a terribly hard track to learn. I mean, some of the chicanes are a little bit, you know, as Guy Martin, you know, would say it, a little, you know, just straight stop.
Boy, did he get in trouble for that.
Well, don't get me wrong. I'm not the biggest Guy Martin fan in the world, but I don't see why everyone jumped on him about it, because all he was saying was he didn't like the chicanes. And, like, there's nothing wrong with having an opinion about, you know, that'd be like me saying, you know, I don't like, you know, this part of the TT course because it's really bumpy. Well, I mean, it's just like, that's your, yeah, it's just, he doesn't like chicanes, which I don't think anyone, they're like, in my opinion, the track is awesome.
The reason that he got in trouble for that was because he said the circuit was boring.
Well, yeah, I mean, it is with the chicanes. Like, with the chicanes, I can totally see why, because, like, with the chicanes there, it doesn't add, like, they're not, like, fun. Like, when you ride through them, you're not like, oh, you know, I love this turn. They just, they suck all the life out of it.
Okay, well, they're great, but I mean, there's an...
I personally don't see why everyone jumped over. I think everyone just wanted to jump on about it just because it's Guy Martin and everyone, you know, everyone either loves him or hates him or whatever. Like I said, I'm not a particularly big fan of him, but you know, he, I don't think he said anything wrong. You know, I don't know any rider at the Northwest that likes the chicanes.
Yeah. Well,
I understand why they're there. It's, you know, to control the speeds, which are, you know, insane. You know, if without those chicanes, some of those turns would just be unreal.
Yeah.
But they could have done a better job. Like they, most of the chicanes, there's nothing around. Like, you're in the middle of, like, you know, the I think there's two or three of the chicanes, like, literally you're on the fast sections, like, where there's no houses or anything, so they could have easily just cut out more of the road and made a more of, like, an actual, you know, turn. than like these just kind of like, I want to say half-assed chicanes, but they're just not, there's like no thought into them. Like there's no like, well, we should make this flow a little more, so you know it's a little bit more enjoyable for the riders, and then, you know, it adds some, you know, some kind of, you know, technicality to the track, where these are just like, yeah, point, get point, stop, go.
Yeah. Well, okay, and point taken, and especially when you can see them from overhead on the helicopter shots, they are rather, how do I put it, generic.
Yeah, just generic rudimentary chicanes, which that's my only problem. I don't have a problem with putting a chicane in, just make it better like than what it is.
Yeah, all right.
That's my only argument. That's why I don't really, I would say maybe Guy Martin went a little bit over the top with some of the things he said, and he was like, you know, saying he's just not bothered with it, and he kind of seemed like disinterested, but, you know, saying that he didn't like the chicanes, I have no problem, you know, I have no argument with that point. You know, I didn't particularly like him either.
Well, to be fair, he did come back and apologize for his comments, and I know his team bosses got a fair amount of stick for that particular commentary.
But I mean, hell, for the team, that was probably the, I mean, they got, I mean, besides Sealy,
they got a lot of airtime.
That was a hell of a lot of airtime for the team, you know. So, as they say, no, there's no such thing as bad publicity.
Okay, so when I lost you last time, as our conversation got interrupted, one of the things that I wanted to talk with you about was something that most people don't even get. When you're hustling around, and I'm sure you probably did this, you probably went around in a hire car and drove the course and looked at it and was trying to, you know, figure out what things were like. And hopefully you went with somebody that actually had some experience with the course. But when you're doing it on a bike at that kind of pace, one of the things that happens all the time is your front end keeps coming up. There's not a whole lot you can do about it. And the lighter riders, even more so. That's got to be a little bit fearful.
Yeah, the Northwest is probably the worst for that of any track I've ever ridden, even worse than the TT, because I would say maybe not because of the actual speeds and the rises in the road, because when you get that a little bit, the TT, I would say the bigger issue was how windy it was there. And so, I mean, number one, you're at those speeds, your front end is already getting pretty light, and you're hitting these little rises, but then the wind was just like, I mean, they had like, I would say over the week, we averaged like 30 mile an hour winds.
Yeah, you could see, and one of the things they were focusing on, and we were blessed over here in the U.S. at least, with some incredibly good streaming coverage from BBC Sport, and you could see the flag, you know.
See, Jim, if you had a real phone, then when people call me, it wouldn't kick me off my freaking phone, my Skype.
Dude, I'm sitting here on a computer with a very high speed internet connection. This is not me.
I know, but if you, whenever I'm on, I use Skype on my phone, and whenever I'm on it, if someone calls me like my normal, my regular, like if someone calls my mobile number, it kicks me off Skype.
Ah, okay.
I don't know why.
Well, I do have a real phone, but I can't use that to record conversations. This one, I'm almost getting tired of recording at this point.
I'm just busting your balls.
All right. I've got plenty of them. all right. So, and your point is very well taken. And they basically knocked your super stock race from what, Thursday to Saturday, right?
Well, that was a whole other story.
Both because of light and because of wind.
Well, no, I don't know. It was they knocked it back because of light. I don't think at any time during the week did they knock anything back because of wind. Because I'll tell you what, we were out there a couple times and it was windy as shit, and they didn't red flag it or bring us in. Yeah. The only time they red flagged it for any kind of weather or wind or rain was in my super bike practice on Tuesday or super. I don't know. It started pouring down rain, and they ended the session early. Because there was beginning to have standing water form on the track, which obviously that creates, you know, it doesn't matter if you have wets.
One of the things,
on it creates an issue with hydroplaning.
Yeah. One of the issues that always occurs, and people, at least here in the States, don't quite get
Over there, you guys are basically running from what? Maybe 3 p.m. Up until 9 p.m. when the roads have to be reopened, right?
Yeah.
Not something that we normally see here, and certainly not a regular short circuit schedule.
Yeah, it's definitely weird to be, like, you know, having a race scheduled for 8 o'clock at night. Like, I think our Thursday Superstock race was supposed to be at 8 o'clock at night. And then, you know, obviously, all the red flags and everything else is what, you know, they had to, it was more of having to reopen the roads than, you know, the light issue. Because I think the red flag that happened on Thursday night race, we were delayed until like 8, I would say like 8:30, 8:40, and then they called it because they have to reopen the roads. Yeah. So that, you know, that kind of sucked. And then the same issue, well, I heard mixed opinions on why they canceled the race on Saturday, but, you know, I'll allow people to form their own opinion on that.
I'm keeping that one to myself. The one corner though that people consistently seem to complain about, I think they call it Black Hills or something like that.
You said people complain about it?
With light, late in the day.
Oh yeah, I would say it wasn't that bad. I mean, if you race the TT, then it's not bad at all. You know, nothing compares to the light, you know, at the TT at, you know, later in the day when you're having it come in your face in certain areas and the trees, you know, messing with, you know, the trees and the shadows messing with your eyes. Like when you crested Black Hill, yeah, the sun was a little bit in your eyes, but I didn't have too bad of an issue with it because it was mostly overcast when we were out there. There was a couple times when it was like decently sunny, but, you know, when the light was becoming an issue, it was mostly overcast. So I never really had a much of a problem with it.
Okay. What between now and the TT do you have to fix with your bike to, because you said something to me when we talked the other day. You're like, oh, yeah, it's not very, very wheelie prone. You were still fairly wheelie prone. What do you have to fix with your bike to get it to what you think will work best at the aisle?
I mean, honestly, I think our setting as it is, I mean, when I say wheelie prone, I mean, there was nothing unmanageable about it. Like at the Northwest, it was totally stable, other than the wind, which was, you know, when it went on the, I think the Thursday when the wind was pretty light, the thing was dead stable on the straights.
Okay.
And even when it was on Saturday, it was pretty dead stable. Like the front end was getting a little light, but it wasn't anything, you know, unstable. So I think going to the TT, and even Ben feels the same. I mean, I think we have a great base setting to start with. The only thing maybe need addressing is, you know, some of the, you know, absorption of the bumps, you know, in certain areas that, you know, it's a little bit harsh on the bumps, but the frame is really stiff on the Bimota, so it might be one of those things where, you know, but it might work really well when we get there. I don't know. You know, it's hard to, the Northwest is the best test for it, and it, you know, in my opinion, it passed with flying colors there, so I don't think we're going to have to change a whole lot, but, you know, well, I guess, you know, we'll find out when we get there.
I mean, you're riding a Factra Bimota BB3. Talk to me about the componentry and, like, the cool little bits that are on that, because I know, dude, it's a amazing piece of kit.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't say it's a factory. I mean, we're supported by the factory, obviously, but it's not, you know, the World Superbike bike. You know, it's got a lot of, you know, it's pretty much like if you were going to go out and buy, like, a Panigale 1199R, where it comes with the Ohlins forks on it standard and all the trick bits on it standard. Like, that's pretty much what it is. It's a standard Superbike, you know, off the Sherman 4. So it's no different than what anyone else would buy. Like, if someone was going to go buy a Bimota BB3 tomorrow, they'd get the same bike. The only thing we have different on it is, like, our tank, you know, is a custom-built tank, you know, to hold, you know, so it tucks into the subframe more, holds more liters of fuel.
Right.
But other than that, like, I mean, there's carbon bits all over. Like, the thing is trick, and you know how most bikes, you have to change out the swing arm, you know, because people want, like, a Superbike swing arm that's, you know, braced differently, it's lighter, it's got, like, the quick change and everything. Like, this comes with that from the factory.
Okay.
So it's already got the trick swing arm, you know, the trick Ohlins fork. So it's got everything on it, you know, standard, but that comes on as a street bike. So that's what's really cool about it is if you buy one, you're buying a Superbike right off the Sherman 4.
That tank, is that going to suffice for 4 laps at the TT?
Yeah, they got it custom built just for the TT, so it holds, I want to say it holds like 24 liters or 23 liters of fuel.
Okay, so you can easily do 2 laps.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, we don't see that being an issue.
Because I know that you know, I know that you've had issues with that in the past, and it's never fun.
Yeah, I'm not going to be affected by that like I did last year. So thank God.
All right. Well, maybe you can wave at Mark. You know, when he's sitting over there having a pint at the pub.
Yeah. No. No comment.
your team, and you got a teammate this year at the TT.
Yeah, Ben Wiley.
Oh, that's right. Okay.
Yep.
And he's been over there before, I'm sure.
Oh yeah, Ben. I mean, Ben's had top tens in Supersport before, and I think he's finished once in the top 10 in Superbike. I think he's a fairly accomplished rider. He's just had some bad years, but I think when I last kind of teamed up with him back in 2011, and a little kind of fish in 2012, like he had top tens in the Supersport races.
Oh, and 2011 was when I was there.
He used to ride World Endurance. He's done Suzuka and all that stuff. Like, I think he rode for Phase One Yamaha, and I think they won the Superstock Championship the 1 year he rode for him.
How do you guys work together as teammates? And did he give you advice back and forth?
Oh yeah, we're good friends. Yeah, work really well together. We get along really well. He doesn't mind, giving me advice and information and feedback, and we bat ideas back and forth and everything. So, yeah, he's good as a team. He kind of helps run the team too. So he's been really good as far as that goes, and making sure I kind of have what I need, with the bike and everything, because it's his own. It's kind of a combination of his team and the team principal, Australian guy. He's a big Bimota enthusiast, so it's a combination of those two running the whole program, and they look after me, make sure I have what I need. So overall, yeah, I mean, it's been definitely a good experience so far. I'm glad I'm where I'm at.
All right, so when are you heading back over to the?
I leave next Friday, so I'll be there on Saturday.
Are you taking Flybe again? You probably are E4 man.
No, what am I feeling? I always fly. I haven't flown Flybe for a while. I always fly. I fly into Belfast, and then I'm taking a small called CityWing. They're a pretty small airline, smaller than Flybe.
Right.
So I'm taking them from Belfast City over to the TT, and then I forget who I'm coming back with. I think I still have to book my ferry back.
So that means you'll actually be able to take a piece of luggage over without having to like give over your firstborn child.
Well, all my luggage, thank God, all my stuff's already there. So all I'm taking over is like my book bag and my little carry on with some clothes.
That's totally cheating.
Yeah. So last year I had to do that, and they screwed me out of like $350 to take my gear bag over. So yeah, this year I when I went over for the test, I just left all my gear over there with Ben. So they have my leathers, my helmet, and everything.
All right. Who is your gear sponsor?
Moto Liberty, and well, they're the RST Chi, U.S. distributor. So, Moto Liberty, RST Chi, and then Knox gloves and back protectors, and then Bell helmets. So they're keeping me safe this year. I've been wearing Knox and Bell helmets for a while, and actually I've been an RST Chi for about, I guess this is my third year with them. So
cool.
Yeah, everyone's been treat me good, and especially Bell. Bell's definitely hooks me up, and I love their helmets. So I mean,
yeah, that was a,
can't beat it.
That was a pretty pimp looking helmet.
Yeah, I have another one coming for the different one for the TT, which is going to be even more pimp. So keep an eye out.
I need to get you some stickers, don't I?
Yeah, actually, I think I might still have a few left over from over the years. I got a whole drawer full of stickers from I collect over the years that I don't use. So if I have some, I'll take them over and
give you
some love.
All right. Give me some love, brother. All right. Listen, best of luck. Keep in touch, and I look forward to seeing what you could do. And by the way, great job. Great for bringing it home. Great for being safe. And I look forward to seeing what you can do with the GT.
Yeah, definitely. Me too. Thanks, buddy.
All right, brother. Take care.
All right. All right. Bye. See you, Jim. Bye.
Okay, so thanks to Brandon and you for that interview. Yeah, hope everyone enjoyed it. Always a pleasure to have Brandon and everyone on the show. Hopefully we'll have a couple more road racing interviews coming up ahead of the TT in a couple of weeks.
And there is some TT news coming up that I will kind of keep under my hat, but I'm going next year. Not this year, but I'm planning quite the adventure for 2016. A great matchup. And the weather, for the most part, held off. But, man, I don't know. I'm assuming you watched most of it.
Yeah. I watched most of the Northwest. There are a couple of issues with running the Superstock race. I think the second of the Superstock races had to be abandoned because there was some bad weather on one of the days.
It got too dark.
Yeah, and it got too dark, and then there was quite a bad crash where one rider and one spectator were quite seriously injured. Luckily, both the rider and the spectator are now stable and doing quite well in hospital. Horse Sager, he was also involved in quite a bad crash, but he is also all up and okay.
Yep. We've shifted gears here, by the way, just so everybody knows. We've gone from short circuit racing to real roads racing. We're talking now about a, 9.75-mile circuit, right?
Yes, I think roughly that. And according to Guy Martin, it has far too many chicanes that are far too boring. For those of you who don't know, Guy Martin, as he tends to do, caused a bit of controversy by saying that he was, quote, bored to his back teeth of riding through chicanes. The Northwest is obviously kind of a big triangle, basically, with some chicanes in it to cut down the speeds, because they do get quite high on modern superbikes. So those chicanes are in there for safety reasons. And by Guy Martin saying he's bored of chicanes, that caused one or two people, especially the organisers of the Northwest, to get a little upset, and he had to make an apology. But some great laughs were had before that.
He got in fairly big trouble about that, and the team apologised, as did he. Heat of the moment, as it were, right?
Yep, I'm sure that there were one or two other issues maybe going on that, you know, made him a little extra frustrated, so.
Yeah. Well, it is Guy.
Yes, this is true.
We can't walk through all these results because there's a ton of stuff that went on.
Yes,
but,
in classic road racing style, there are a lot of races, and each race had a lot of entries.
What we'll do is we will include a link in the show notes so that you guys can check out all of the race results, because this is our lead up to the TT. And trust me, for the TT, I'm going to make sure that I have some great interviews for you guys, because I've already got a bunch of stuff lined up.
Well, I'm sure everyone will look forward to that. So check the show notes if you want a link to the results, and I'm pretty sure that if you search BBC Northern Ireland, I'll try and include a link to this if it's still up. There's probably an archived version of the Northwest 200 to view on the BBC website, so hopefully I can find that to put in the show notes as well.
Yeah, and you should absolutely watch it. I mean, it's amazing stuff. All right, Harry.
I think that's a show, more or less.
More or less.
Good to be back on with you, Jim. Lots of people were very happy to have you and Martin reunited. So luckily, good to have you back, basically. That's what I'm saying.
Thank you.
And another weekend of racing coming up. It's just Donington World Superbike coming up, I believe. There's no road racing. MotoGP is obviously week off, then Mugello, and BSB is on its kind of mid-season break for the road racing stuff.
And I really wish you guys would pick somebody else in the fantasy league, because I'm really not happy with getting my ass kicked.
Well, it's because you can only change like 3 times this entire year, so you're kind of unfortunately stuck for a long time.
Yeah.
But alas.
I used to be better.
Oh, that's what we all say.
Way too get old. All right, mate. Great pleasure to talk to you again. Thank you, everybody out there in Motopod land, for taking a listen to us. I'm not quite sure why you keep doing it, but apparently more and more of you keep doing so. We hope to hear from you. Once again, if you'd like to get in touch with us, please write to motopod@motopodcast.com. If you'd like to donate to the show, on the left-hand side of the page at www.motopodcast.com, there are a series of links, and we'd love to have you help us out. Harry, I thank you for all the hard work that you're doing on the show. And
happy to.
Yeah, Martin and that Dave guy.
He'll be back soon.
All right. Great. Talk to you soon, and take care.
Bye, everyone.
Bye-bye.